Where Is My Heart, classic from Annie Herring. 10 and a half minutes after the hour, it's a Tuesday morning. I'm Jim Park, and David Allen Pund is in the newsroom, and Dr. Don Clark on the line from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist and member of the board of Creation Moments. Don, happy Tuesday to you.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dave.
Good morning,
Don. Happy Tuesday to you folks as well.
I'm wondering about the weather compare. What's it like in, this could be a real spring in Garden Valley, I imagine, because up here we're looking at light snow, fog, mist, 30 degrees. That's spring here.
No, it doesn't sound like. No, it is raining and overcast and a little chilly. I mean, when it's you know when it's 50 degrees outside, we say it's chilly.
Yeah. Okay.
If not cold.
Chicken soup weather sounds like. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So we're having sounds like the same precipitation, but it's not solid.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're more likely to get rain than snow today. It says a little light snow now, but. This is the time of the, you know, it's like the shoulder seasons, we call them up here. Fall and spring are shoulder seasons. I think it's when the jet stream kind of flip-flops, goes back and forth. So sometimes it's like spring and sometimes it's more like winter. And this is traditionally the time of the year when we get the big snows, if we're going to get them at all. I mean, like a foot or a foot and a half. And I'm just hoping every day that sun gets a little bit higher in the sky and less likely that's going to happen. So I've had it with snow. That's okay. We've had our share today. This winter. There's a big story that's been afoot over all the media, and they keep presenting it like, well, hey, everybody knows about this, and I'm thinking, no, I don't. Let's start. Gravitational waves.
There'd be two of us.
I have this image of somebody surfing between Jupiter and Mars on these waves. I don't know what gravitational waves are, and I don't know what space-time is. What is space-time? To me, there's two things. There's space and there's time. Individually, I understand them, but when you put them together, it mystifies me. What is it?
Oh, wow. You see, that's where Einstein came into play, because Einstein said, hey, wait a minute, folks. Things that we see are not just made up of length, width, and height, but there's this other variable, if you will, which is called time. And it's an integral part of the matter and the space that's around us. That, in other words, is just another dimension. So instead of having three dimensions, we've got four dimensions, with the fourth dimension being time.
You see, now my head is already starting to hurt.
All right. Well,
you could only measure time.
It's clear as mud here. I mean, I don't know.
Well, time is kind of a figment of our imagination, because we only know it exists by the cycles we observe: the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth turning 24 hours. Without those things, we wouldn't have any sense of time, I don't think.
Well, yeah, you would have to have something to count it by, and therefore that's why we, discovered clocks and all this other stuff to measure time. But that's just obviously a passing of time. It's in our poetry, it's in our literature, it's in everything that we do, because we start this radio program at a certain time, so it's obviously part of life. But
just sounds so artificial. If there was never a fall in the garden and we were immortal, never aged, what good is time anyway? Unless you have an appointment with the serpent or something.
Yeah, well, and that happened at some appointed time. did indeed happen. But you bring up a good point, and it's actually a theological point if indeed time is a part of space, that is, it is a part of this universe and is just another dimension, and God is outside of our dimensions, space-time, and even probably more dimensions than the four, then he can see the beginning from the end, or the end from the beginning. So you know, Scripture clearly says that God is outside of time.
Well, if he created time, he's necessarily outside of time and not subject to it. I can buy that. But here, so I'm locked inside time, huh?
We're locked inside of time for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we live on this earth and we live in this space-time domain, then we're subject, obviously, to its laws that, you know, God had laid down from its foundations. And so, you know, we're kind of locked. But once we go to be with, you know, Jesus in heaven, for example, in paradise, then we're no longer locked into this space-time continuum. And we will be able to essentially see history and the future events, if we should die before, you know, the end comes. We should be able to see the future events as well as the past events, and have a a projection forward and backward, you know, in the time, because we'll too be outside of time.
Well, this is good news, because then there is a time in my future when I'll never be late for anything again.
Ah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
My reputation will be enhanced.
You will always be on time because you will be outside of time.
I think so. I think so. Well, now this goes. Now, Einstein did his work on this as part of his theory of general relativity back in 1915. And there's an article, actually, it's on the Fox Channel, KMSP in the Twin Cities. I imagine a lot of the Fox stations around the country ran the same story. But now scientists are able to somehow measure gravitational waves. Is it right to say it's traveling through space-time? I mean, I have trouble separating time,
from space.
Including time. I have trouble including time in space, you know, that just, you know. So how far and how long? So, okay.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit and really discuss what Einstein, you know, his thinking led him to. And it's an interesting journey, because when Einstein first came out with special relativity, he and as well as many, many others, you know, decided that, hey, there's nothing to space. It's just empty. There's nothing there. And what we have is matter, and then we have space, and there's nothing there.
The great void is what it's been called.
A great void, and there's, you know, there's nothing there. You might have some gases that perhaps haven't, you know, coalesced into cosmic dust or whatever. But other than that, there's nothing there. Well, he had a change of heart, and he had a change of thinking, and that led him to his general relativity theories. And what his change in thinking was, well, no, space is everything. And as a matter of fact, it's not only just space, three dimensions, it's this fourth dimension, time. And if you link all of those together, you can start explaining a lot of things that we see in the universe. So think of it, if you will, as a fabric. I guess one of the easier ways of explaining it is if you have, let's say, a drum, and then you put a rubber membrane on top of the drum instead of the drum head, because you can you can see the deformities in it easier. That's a two-dimensional representation, for example, of let's say space-time. And then you take a ball bearing of, let's say, a centimeter in size, and you roll that across the drum, and depending on, you know, how tight the rubber is, you might see a deflection in the drum head as the ball bearing rolls across.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now let's take a 6-centimeter ball bearing and do the same thing. Well, the 6-centimeter ball bearing is obviously going to be a lot heavier than the 1-centimeter ball bearing. So if you roll that across, you will see a bigger depression.
Not only that, the two will rest side by side, won't they?
They will rest side by side because they're pulled together by what we call gravity.
Aha. So what you're saying is we're going downhill fast.
we're very fast, especially the heavier the mass in the center is. So now you do another experiment and say, okay, I'm going to take this heavier ball bearing, this 6-centimeter ball bearing, I'm going to put it in the middle of the drum head. And now I'm going to roll the smaller ball bearing past it, and instead of going in a straight line, it goes in a curved line around the other ball bearing.
As if in orbit.
As if in orbit.
Hmm.
So Einstein, thinking in now 3-dimensional terms or 4-dimensional terms, put this together with the help of mathematicians into mathematical formulas to say that, hey, there is a fabric to space, there's something to space, and you can distort space. The matter distorts space. The heavier the matter is, the more distortion you have in space. And then even light, for example, that would pass by a heavy object, its path should be distorted and actually should act like a lens. And some experiments were done years ago, and lo and behold, yes, instead of seeing a distant star as one star, when a heavy object passed in front of its path, you saw two stars, as if you had a lens in front of you, and that light was being deflected as the ball bearing experiment I just described to you. So that gave credence to this concept that space and time, or space-time, there is a fabric to it, there is a substance to it, and everything that we see, everything that we feel is made up, if you will, of this fabric in space. So not only does space-time, not only do heavy objects distort space-time, but it also, the matter itself, indeed, could be made up of space-time. Mm-hmm. Now, and I think I've talked about this in the past, but we know, for example, that Genesis chapter 1 says that God spoke several times. Well, the first time that he spoke, you might remember from Genesis 1, verse 2, for example, it says that the earth was formless and void. And the concept there is that it has no form, and there's nothing there that of substance, if you will. Well, picture in your mind, what if God was talking about, in putting it in kind of layman's terms, this fabric of space-time itself? So God first creates this fabric of space-time, the rubber drum head, for example, and then he speaks into it, causes vibrations in the space-time. In those vibrations, he called light. And we know that light must travel through something. or at least that's the logical conclusion, because it's made up of ripples itself. It's made up of wave packets, or very, very tiny little vibrations itself. And then the color of light depends on the frequency, for example, that the vibration in the light is actually causing.
Well, the easiest way for me to see that is as if we know that sound requires a medium to travel through, or it doesn't happen, which is why I always watch Star Wars movies and marvel at the sound of the explosions in space. What it would be silent, because there's no medium for the sound wave to travel through. On Earth, it travels through air and gets from point A to point B and then is received, or it can travel through water as well. So what you're saying is that light travels through the medium of space, space-time.
Right. And before Einstein, they thought it just traveled through, there was just empty space. Mm-hmm. But, from a... from what we see, which you just described, or you take a pebble and you throw it into a still body of water and there's ripples, you would have to imagine that well, gee, if we speak, our vibrations and sound travels through a medium, why doesn't light travel through a medium? It's a logical, you know, question mm-hmm. to ask. And the conclusion would be, well, light does travel through a medium. And anyway, Einstein finally put it all together and said, yes, there is a medium, and this medium we're going to call space-time. So, to kind of complete the story, so God says, let there be light, and then he divided the light from the darkness, and I believe, and it's just a conjecture, obviously, on my part, I believe at that point in time, God was creating light to actually spin on itself, so tiny that it actually created the subatomic particles, which then made up the atomic particles, and then which then made up the substance we now call Earth, mm-hmm. and the stars and the moon and the sun and, you know, everything that we see out there from a matter point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Which then means that if indeed that logical analysis, if you will, makes any sense or is correct, then everything physical is just a vibration in space caused by the very voice of God.
And quantum mechanics is backing that up now, isn't it?
Yes, that it's, there is a theory that's called string theory, which comes into popular, you know, is popular for a while, and it falls out of being popular, then it falls back in. But it's going back and forth and saying that there's little tiny strings that vibrate, and that makes up, let's say, we got three of them, that makes up an electron.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have more of them that makes up, you know, neutrons and protons, and that then is the building blocks of all of the elements that we know here on Earth. So it seems that physics is indeed agreeing with this concept of vibrations. And on a macro scale, they've now directly observed a ripple in space, for example, caused by two black holes colliding with each other. Now, you're going to ask, or you should ask, what's a black hole?
What's a black hole?
Okay. It's... If matter gets so dense that when you throw a marble, for example, that 1 centimeter ball bearing
yeah.
across the drum surface, that it is so dense and the valley is so deep that there's no way that marble is going to come out again, or in this case, there's no way that even light comes out, you know, from it, then we call that heavy, heavy object in the center, or, you know, a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a hole. It's just a deep, deep valley that even light can't...
A deep depression in the space-time fabric.
Right.
Okay.
So they assume, or they have estimated or calculated that there was this spiraling two black holes spiraling around each other. They estimated that one had about 36 times the mass of the sun, and another one had 29 times the mass of the sun, and they were spiraling around each other, and then eventually they spiraled into each other and collided, and when they collided, it caused a ripple through space. A very short ripple, because it was like 1/4 of a second by the time it reached us. That ripple then we detected with two gravitational wave detectors called the Advanced Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory.
It needs a new name.
Yeah, LIGO.
Okay. Now we're talking.
Or a LIGO is mm-hmm. for the advanced LIGO.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically just describes what the instrument is, and all the instrument is you've got a laser beam, you've got two tubes. They only happen to be 4 kilometers in length. They're perpendicular to each other. and which is, you know, 2.5 miles long, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. They're perpendicular to each other, and there's a light beam, there's a splitter, light splitter. One beam goes straight, the other one goes at 90-degree angles. They hit mirrors at the end of this tunnel, these two tunnels. They are reflected back. And when they're reflected back, they're out of phase. So the detector, which is like 90 degrees away from the light source, then shouldn't see any signal. And it, for all practical purposes, it doesn't. I mean, there's some noise in any instrument that you design. So there's like little ripples and just random noise. Mm-hmm. Well, as a gravitational wave passes through the Earth, for example, they surmise, well, you know, one of these tubes is going to be bent a little bit at some point in time, and that bending or lengthening will then cause the interference pattern not to be perfect, but to shift a little bit, and you should see a ripple or a signal from that shift.
So this is an ultra-sensitive device where ripples in light waves are detected.
Well, ripples in the Earth's space, for example. Yeah. Ripples in space.
That would then change, but the medium that we use to represent that is the light, the beams of light. So they behave differently. They're no longer out of phase in the same way when there's a disturbance.
Right. Okay. Let's say the tube, one of the tubes lengthens a little bit because mm-hmm. it's being stretched by this gravitational wave, which means that everything, all the space around it is being stretched as well. Mm-hmm. So the mirror is a little bit longer than it was, originally. And so it stretches and then it collapses and it stretches and it collapses and it kind of oscillates back and forth. Well, that's what they saw, was an oscillating signal, for example, that they detected. And it turned out to be a sound. It sounded like a chirp because mm-hmm. it started at a lower frequency and then it ended up with a higher frequency and then it stopped. It was, like I said, only a quarter of a second in length, which is not very long.
That's a good thing that someone was paying attention then, huh?
Yeah, and it was a good thing that two of these, because they were going through and revamping their detectors, they had several of them around the world, but only two were online. Mm-hmm. And one happened to be in Livingston, Louisiana, and the other one was Hanford, Washington. And those two caught the ripple, and they caught it 7 milliseconds apart.
Which means they can determine a direction.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. and that's what they did. They did determine a direction, and that's how they figured out that, oh, it looks like it was this collision of this of these two black holes that caused this event. And now they say that event happened 600 million and 1.8 million years ago, between 600 and 1.8 uh-huh. million years ago. We can argue that, and we have in the past.
Well, let's get into that for a second, because that presupposes that light travels at a consistent speed, a set speed. Now, we were talking about sound through air and sound through water. We know if somebody says something and you're far enough away, you don't hear it. The closer you get, the louder it gets, which means that the strength of the signal changes over time. And as I recall from my high school physics, it's the law of decreasing squares. If you're 2 feet away, it's at one level, and if you're 4 feet away, it's at precisely half the energy it was at 2 feet away. So it diminishes over distance.
Well, the square, it's a quarter. It's a quarter of the energy it was at 2 feet away.
Mm-hmm. And then
you've doubled the distance, but you quadrupled the decrease
yes.
in energy.
Mm-hmm. Now, could the same thing happen to light or something similar?
Well, light has no mass. It has no rest mass. It has mass, but it has no rest mass. Mm-hmm. So if you stop light, there would be it's just an energy carrier, if you will. But certainly with the gravitational wave, that's exactly mm-hmm. what the point was. Mm-hmm. The event was so far away that by the time it reached Earth, its energy was pretty well diminished. We still saw a ripple, but it was very faint, and hence the need to use these very sensitive mm-hmm. instruments. Mm-hmm.
But see, if it had slowed down by the time it reached us, it would give us the impression that this thing was farther away, which meant older than it might really have been. It would change our perception of time and distance.
Well, that's exactly right. And so look, I mean, we know that large objects, for example, in space, large masses in space, distort space. It distorts it so much that you can create a black hole where light can't even get out. Mm-hmm. All right. So, but does it change the fabric of space? Now, I'm going to just use a very simple, if you've knitted a sheet, for example, we know that the threads crossing each other have a certain distance apart. Now, is it possible that when mass interacts with space, time, that those distances are actually compressed, so that you've got like a tighter weave, for example, where there is heavy mass, mm-hmm. and in between masses, the weave is actually stretched out so that the fabric of space itself is stretched mm-hmm. in between those heavy objects.
So the density of whatever this material is not uniform from point A to point B.
Exactly. And so therefore, you would anticipate or you would expect light to travel slower near mass, as you just described, mm-hmm. and faster in between. Now, there is a law of physics that says, at least not a law, but there is a supposition that says that the speed of light doesn't change. Yeah, I don't care where you are in space. If you measure the speed of light at that point, it's going to be the same, because the space that you're in, the fabric, even if it's stretched out, you won't be able to detect any changes, because it's the very fabric of space itself.
That's why it's the theory of relativity.
Exactly.
Aha!
It's all relative to where you are.
Don, you're good.
As well as, for example, the speed traveling in a spaceship, the thought experiment. Mm-hmm. It's not a thought experiment, because they've done it now, but it's one of the outcroppings, if you will, one of the conclusions from this whole fabric of space and Einstein's relativity was that a guy traveling out in space near the speed of light, he would experience a very short period of time to go to, let's say, the first star away from us, Alpha Centauri, and then come back, whereas his brother, he would be maybe a couple of weeks old. Mm-hmm. His brother may have aged 40 or 50 years during that time. But relative, to his fast travels, mm-hmm. he's not aging, because time is slowing down. It's slowing down so much that he gets into the spaceship, it takes off, it accelerates, and finally reaches its final velocity. And for him, it's like, okay, I just left Earth. Oh, here's the star. I'm coming up to the star. Mm-hmm. It's just right there, and it's getting bigger pretty fast. But his poor brother on Earth, who's waiting for him, is aging and aging and aging, and therefore, you got this link between time and space and the speed and now, gravity And the more massive an object is, the slower things are. So light, even if you're traveling in a black hole, for example, and you've seen science fiction movies where, you know, folks are traveling in a black hole, and time slows down, almost stops for them, because they've come to this massive object. And, things aren't going for them. So they'll never crash into the black hole. But folks on the outside of the black hole, for example, are saying, these guys are doomed. They're mm-hmm. history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been several movies that have dealt with that very thing in the past few years. And but I didn't understand it until just now, Don.
There you go. Very good.
Space-time, gravitational waves. And in fact, there are a couple of articles that people can look at. One, there, I did put a link to the Fox article in our chat window. And I'm just about to put, there's another explanation of space-time and gravitational waves that's over at Nature Magazine, International Weekly Journal of Science. I'm going to put that link in the chat window as well. That one explains it kind of at a junior high school level. I mean, very clear. And I think you'll learn something when you look at the second link just going in the window right now. So this is interesting stuff. And I'm still trying to nail down the relationship between light and time. It seems like they're intimately connected somehow here, that one wouldn't exist without the other. Is that true?
Well, yeah, we wouldn't exist, at least in the physical form, without time. Mm-hmm. it's a very, very part of the fabric of space. That's kind of the whole point. And this whole idea that one would think that the fabric of space would be uniform throughout space when you've got massive stuff there is, in my mind, a little. I don't want to say silly, but mm-hmm. Einstein's already proven that space is distorted. So therefore, if there is a fabric to the space, which is the whole point of these gravitational waves, and you can ripple space by gravity by having mm-hmm. these large collisions, for example, then space itself must be distorted. And through that distortion, now light can travel faster where there is no mass. And when it comes up to mass, light, it would, on a relative term, I mean, relative where you are, light, the speed of light doesn't change. But from an outside observer, it would change based on the fabric of space.
Let's get even just for the last couple of minutes here. Let's get even more metaphysical here.
Sure.
God is spirit. We're taught that. He's outside the space-time continuum. I love that phrase. And so he's not affected by it. He created it. Now, there's we as humans have a spiritual component as well. And sometimes we think of the spiritual realm, whatever that is, as a dimension. But according to what you're telling me, the spirit realm is not a dimension. It's outside of the existing dimensions. It's something that we really have it's part of us, but we don't see it anymore. I mean, explain that.
Well, we know that God breathed life into us.
Fix this for me, Don. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, the Bible fixes it for us. Because we know that there is the first heaven, which we live in. It's our domain, if you will. All right? So that's our space-time. It's we know that it's made up of at least four dimensions, and could be 10, but it's made up of at least four dimensions. Then you have the third heaven, which is talked about by Peter. Whether I was caught up in the third heaven, I don't know. But,
Paul,
I wasn't here, but I was somewhere, and I don't know where I was. And then, of course, John talks about the same thing. Mm-hmm. He's caught up into heaven, and he talks to Jesus, mm-hmm. and he talks to the angels. If you have a first heaven, if you have a third heaven, then that's God's domain, is the third heaven. And the angels' domain is in the third heaven, but the angels, of course, can come back between the first heaven and the third heaven and communicate, bring messages to us from God himself. Well, if you've got the first heaven, you got the third heaven, then by default, there's got to be a second heaven.
Yeah.
And what's the second heaven for? Well, the second heaven is for the demons and Satan, and that's his realm.
The powers of the air, yeah.
Yeah, so the principalities and powers of, you know, darkness and all of this is in the second heaven. Well, let's put it into easy terms. If we have four dimensions, at least four dimensions to our realm, it would make sense that Satan in his realm would have four dimensions, so that's eight. And then God in his realm, because he's outside of all of this, would have to have at least another four. So, and there's four living creatures. I mean, you know, the mm-hmm. concept of four is throughout, you know, Scripture. So now you, to everything, you've got 12 dimensions, which is interesting because there were 12 stones on the breastplate, and 12 mm-hmm. appears a lot of times. And, of course, we double that when we get to the throne room, and you've got the 24 elders around the throne room. And so, you know, it's possible that maybe our dimensions, maybe there's eight dimensions to our space, and therefore that gives you 24. Mm-hmm. Our physical, I have one of the things that as I look through Scripture and look in the physical realm, it's the physical realm is a reflection of the spiritual realm. And that is how God created it. He created the Garden of Eden, for example, would be a place where man could live forever and God could come and walk with man in the cool of the evening as he did before the fall.
Hmm. Now, we've also talked about the notion, this was just a couple of months ago, that ideas, thoughts, do not originate physically in the brain, that there's now medical evidence that that's the case, and it comes from near-death experiences and a lot of research into that kind of thing, suggesting that ideas come from perhaps the spiritual, I don't want to say dimension now, but realm. What do you think?
Yeah, the spiritual realm. That's mm-hmm. that's fine. I mean, you know, and so if that's the case, we know that God can communicate to us through the Spirit. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have a Spirit is because God breathed it into us. He communicates to us through the Spirit. So that's how we can communicate with God is through
and
the Spirit.
And our brains are essentially like radios. They're receivers.
They're receivers. So they interpret the fluctuations mm-hmm. in our spirit, whatever, you know, and then we get a mental picture or we get a word or we get a sentence or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. Now, if God can communicate and he's spirit, if the devil and the demons can communicate through us because they're spirits, and they're, you know, maybe telling us stuff all the time, then we have two sources of thought. One is from God, one is from the devil.
You have an angel on one shoulder and a little devil on the other. And yeah, that just says this concept has been understood in a way for eons, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Now, of course, we can have our own thoughts. I mean, that's, you know, so we can, you know, determine that, okay, you know, I'm going to go build this, whatever it is. I'm going to build this boat or I'm going to build this car or I'm going to do something. And so we can have our own thoughts. But, you know, what does the Bible say about our thoughts?
Well, they're evil. They come from out of our heart.
Well, I mean,
they can.
Our hearts could be continuously evil, and mm-hmm. as they were in the days of Noah. but it says, you know, guard your heart, take every thought captive. You know,
Second Corinthians 10:5. That's our motto here. Yeah.
Take every thought captive. Well, what does
captive
mean?
To Christ.
It means that other people are talking to you. Other mm-hmm. beings are talking to you. Mm-hmm. And you need to analyze to see what is good and what is evil and to discern between the two so that then you could act in a godly way.
Hmm. Well, I think you figured it out, Don. I think we've reached the end.
We're at the end of something, and it's probably the end of this program.
Just felt a little gravitational wave there that passed through. Happened to start the music. And Don, this is great stuff. This is good. And I would encourage people to take a look at those two articles. They're not deep scientific articles. They're just one is how they detected the gravitational wave. The other is what a gravitational wave is. They could find it all interesting. Don Clark, member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to tell you, too, about creationmoments.com. You'll find them just a great resource for scientific evidence of a young Earth creation. And it's valid stuff. And if you can look at it unemotionally and just take it for the science that it is and not get all caught up in theology, you can learn something. And then your theology winds up being altered just a little bit. And you grow. And that's what's great about Creation Moments. You can find a link to them on our website at Broken Road Radio. Don Clark, Dr. Don, thank you very much. Appreciate the time as always. And next week you've got the day off. We won't have a morning show next Tuesday.
Oh, you won't. Okay.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Very good. Well, you have a great 2 weeks then.
Unfortunately, there's no time for David to ask a question, or we'd be here for another hour and a half, wouldn't we, David?
I think I need another program to figure out enough to ask a question.
I think so. I know. Don, have a great week. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Okay. So long.